number two.
Good morning. May it please the court. Howard Goodfriend for the property owners, Caseburg and Holmquist. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, if I may, Judge Appoy.
Proceed.
The city state enforcement of this judgment quieting title while unsuccessfully appealing the trial court's order.
Let me ask you a preliminary question.
Go right ahead.
I know this shocks you that we're talking so quickly, but if after mandate, $118,000 worth of damages are proved, but in a dispute between private parties, a bond for only $100,000 was posted. Is there a right to a deficiency judgment, or can you only execute against the bonded amount?
Yeah, you know, I think the In re foreclosure of liens case deals with that, and I think the liability of a private party is limited to the supersedious bond.
So that's a Supreme Court case. The statute here frees the government from the requirement of posting a bond, but it doesn't preclude them from posting a bond. The government could post a bond if it wanted to. And if it's so that the posted amount would limit liability, the government could choose to limit its liability by posting the bond, right?
I think hypothetically that's possible.
So this, what this does is it doesn't mandate that the government behave in either of one, two, or three ways. It just gives the government more choices than private people have.
It does, but it also provides that once the government exercises its right to supersede without bond, it shall be liable as a private party would. And the fact that it chose not to limit its liability, I think, is reflective of the fact that you're entitled upon affirmance and
in your briefing, you spend some time, both parties do, looking at the rules of appellate procedure that deal with calculating, which is a prediction, calculating what the amount of the bond should be. I'm curious why anybody would be of the belief that that rule would in any way limit or direct the manner in which damages ultimately would be proved after mandate. Isn't proof of damages after mandate just simply the same inquiry as in any other circumstance where someone has to prove damage?
I believe that's true. But in terms of, I think the rule provides guidance, and I think Seventh Elect Church and Norco.
Because we want it to be close, because there's probably not going to be a deficiency judgment, right?
Because we are going to presume that what the rule does is it presumes that if a party is unable to enforce a judgment pending appeal, that party will incur some loss. In the case of a money judgment, it's the loss of use of the money. Mm-hmm. In the case of a decision affecting property, it's the loss of use of the property.
Loss of use of the money would generally be covered by the statutory rate of interest that would accrue.
Correct.
Right? So you wouldn't need a hearing on that.
Well, you'd need due process would require you to go into court post-mandate and liquidate the amount and get a judgment. In terms of a decision affecting property, there are, and the rule indicates this, that when you're talking about a private party, there could be more damages than loss of use. And in fact, in this case, what the owners did was they went in when the city superseded without bond and said, look, we think there's going to be some more damages here besides loss of use because the city has posted the sign inviting the public to use this property during the pendency of the appeal, and that's sort of an equitable decision, and we want the court to condition the supersedious. We were trying to minimize the damage by getting the trial court to order as a matter of equity that, yes, you can stay enforcement of the judgment. They can't take possession, ownership, and title of the property pending appeal, but we shouldn't have the sign up and this website allowing people and inviting them to come and use it.
At the hearing, did the city present any evidence of what they calculated the damages to be, or what, did they just take the view that there were no damages that could be proved?
It was the latter, Your Honor. They took the position that the owners were absolutely not entitled to any damages at all because they could use the property in common with the general public.
So there is only the prevailing party's evidence on measure of damages in the record.
That's true. And the prevailing party's measurement of damages coincidentally adopted the city's own methodology for how you calculate the rental value of a street end, a waterfront street end. And that was the methodology that was presented to the trial court, and it was unrebutted. And it arrived at a measure of $3,600 per month for each of the 21 months between entry of judgment and return of the mandate. We think at a minimum we are entitled to that, plus whatever additional damages the owners can present upon proof to the trial court.
Well, I'm curious as to, are you asking that it be remanded for additional fact-finding if you were to prevail on the issue that you raise? Or is the fact-finding closed? There was a hearing, and we have the facts what we have, and that's the way it should be.
That is the latter. This is not a trial where you have to present evidence. Typically, it's done by affidavit, and the affidavits were unrebutted. So that is what we are asking for. We said that the loss of use to the owners for the 60 feet of waterfront was
the loss of exclusive use.
The loss of exclusive use and the loss of
so the city makes the point that you were free to use it too.
That's true. They do
sort of like Zhivago in this.
You know, I was watching that movie over Christmas, and that you know, Yuri comes home to his aunt and uncle, and there
and
they
he
are.
He admits that this is much better. that the more needy are living in his home.
Well, you know, luckily we're not in post-revolution Russia, and that is not the way we do things here. If you're deprived of use, particularly by the government, you're entitled to compensation, and there were two elements of that compensation that were offered that were unrebutted, the loss of use and the additional damage that the owners incurred, measured by about half of that loss of use value, because they had to put up as adjoining property owners with the nuisance and hassle of living next to a public park. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
May it please the court, Kelly Stone for the City of Seattle.
Were you denied any opportunity to present evidence on what the appropriate measure of damages should be?
In the briefing below in the trial court, there wasn't an oral hearing, oral argument. So in the briefing, the city argued that if there was actually damages proven, that rental value was likely not the appropriate way to measure it. But it's difficult to measure damages when nothing's
so you
shown.
But you weren't denied any opportunity here. You're not here. I mean, obviously you're the government, so you don't actually have due process rights.
Right.
You weren't denied any ability to present it if you'd cared to.
If we had chosen to say this is the correct way to measure it, yes, we could have.
It may be asking even more directly, so that we know what you think our options are. If we thought the trial court entered the wrong decision, is there any necessity of remand for a trial on damages as opposed to directing judgment be entered on the evidence presented?
I think that
limiting them to their theory at summary judgment.
This was a motion after trial, so there's no
summary judgment.
No summary judgment. It was sort of an after judgment
Correct.
Motion. So I think if it was going to be remanded, the question then, the trial court's order is two lines, and it says that the plaintiff's motion to establish delay damages is denied. So I think it's the trial court's discretion as to, under the rule, whether damages have been established, and then if they've been established, the trial court has the discretion to award an appropriate amount.
Yeah, but the amount would have to be within the range of the evidence, and there's really no range here. There's just the plaintiff's figuring.
Well, there's only their figuring. There's no evidence that they've actually been damaged.
Well, sure there is. Sure there is. They're just like Chivago. They were denied the exclusive use of their real property. Same as Chivago. And other people were allowed to use the street in, the same as Chivago's home was allowed to be used by those more deserving. The difference being two different political structures.
Well, I think
Bolshevism had its heyday. but here, Caseburg and Holmquist are not required to stand there and say, this is much better. They're entitled to get compensated for the denial. For if they can prove what the quantified amount would be from the clear damage they suffered. There's no question that they were denied exclusive use of their property. That's the fact of damage. I mean, that's really not even open to debate. So then the question is, did they provide evidence of how that would be quantified? And apparently, what they did is they used the very same formula that the city uses to quantify the value. I can't imagine a more perfect quantification.
Well, two things on that. I think there is a difference from Chivago, one being that while they may have been, they were denied their exclusive use of the property, just because they couldn't exclusively use it doesn't mean that they actually suffered a damage, incurred a damage,
sure
which
says.
Is what the rule contemplates.
They lost the right to exclusive use, which is what you sell for, based on the formula that they want to collect on. You sell the right to exclusive use.
But in the cases
and
that...
And they want you to pay them for having taken that right from them on the same basis.
But the cases clearly show it's like a breach of contract or negligent misrepresentation. The breach may have occurred.
Well, let me ask this. Suppose, and I don't know what these homes look like, but let's say there's a big backyard that abuts the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And you, the city, go in and build a fence in the middle of that backyard, not in the street end, just the middle of their backyard. And you put up picnic tables. And you put on your website, everybody go have picnics in Holmquist's backyard, but only the half that we've designated. And you put a gate in, so Holmquist can have picnics there too.
Mm-hmm.
No damages, right?
That's a different situation.
How is that different?
Because
you're inviting people to use their property, which is exactly what happened here, only that it was the street end.
It's not exactly what happened here. So in an inverse condemnation, which sounds...
I'm not saying an inverse condemnation. I'm describing a trespass.
Okay, but that would assume that the before status of the property was that it was private property.
It was.
No, the underlying suit was to quiet title, which...
It was always private property. And by the way, always private property that the city never had any colorable claim to. The one frivolous claim in this entire litigation is the city's assertion that if you believe us on the law, we have title to this property. If the city had been believed in the underlying lawsuit, King County would have had title to the property. So the city never had a leg to stand on in this dispute. But the thrust of that is ever since the contracts, the real estate contracts, were satisfied, that was their private property. Quieting title was just to get you to make you to leave them alone and quit trying to cloud their title. But they owned the property all that time.
While the law may have shown that, the facts of the case did not. They had never fenced it off. It has been open to the public for over 80 years. And so everybody treated it as if it was.
I understand how wrong everybody was. I'm just saying it was in fact their property, and it was their property on the day that you superseded.
And we did nothing other than what had been done.
You did nothing other than deny them the exclusive use of their property after a court had ruled that it was in fact their private property.
And if they had believed that they had been damaged for all of those years in some quantifiable amount by the inability to put a fence up, then they should have sued for more than...
Who should they have sued?
They sued the county to begin with.
Well, who should they have sued, you say, for more? I mean, I assume you're coming up with some sort of money claim.
Well, and that's what I can't figure out why they think that they get more than the title to it when we didn't. The
they get
radius did
because
nothing
the,
more.
Because when you own property, when you own real property mm-hmm. in America, you have the right to exclude people
absolutely.
From your real property.
Yes.
And you deprive them of that right by superseding the judgment. And so now you just have to pay up. You don't have to post a bond because you're supposed to be good for it.
Right.
Okay, you're not good for it. So you have to come here, and apparently we have to make you be good for it. But you have to pay the cost for what you did.
Well,
it's not free if you're wrong.
The purpose of the rule is so that they can get their judgment afterwards, and the city and government entities are exempt from the bond because it's assumed that we're good for it. It's not that the city doesn't have the money. The issue here is the rule contemplates that they actually show some damage that resulted.
Yeah, they have. They were denied
the
exclusive use of their real property.
In the typical cases, there has to be some quantifiable damage.
And they've quantified it.
The property wasn't damaged.
And they've quantified it. They want you
to
pay. This doesn't work so well when we talk at the same time. They want you to pay the amount that you would have charged them for the very same thing.
But we weren't charging rent. We didn't collect
rent. They want you to pay the amount that you would have charged them for the very same thing. If you were to have leased to them that street end, if it had been a street end, you would have charged them a particular amount. They want you to pay to them that amount. This seems so logical to me. It's amazing to me that we're here.
Well, I'm utterly confused because the cases
show. Well, I don't doubt that. But the fact of the matter is they've established their damages by wanting you to pay that which you charge others for the very same thing.
But we've never charged. Here's the difference. We've never charged for that street end. We've let
you charged for others.
We've let the public use
you've
that.
You've charged for others, right?
True.
Yeah.
We've let the public.
And then what you took was a fair value for that, right? You didn't mess with people. You didn't take more than you were entitled to. You took a fair value for that, right?
We have permits, yes. We don't rent the street ends. We permit them, which is the difference. We actually would charge much less than the rental ordinance shows. We would not rent it like that ordinance shows. SDOT, when they give or allow a private property to use a street end, they do it under a permit, and the amount is much, much less. But we would never do
that.
And
is that
the
amount they're seeking, the much, much less?
What plaintiffs are seeking?
Yeah, that's the amount they're seeking.
No, it is not. They are not seeking the permit amounts that they could have collected if it had been permitted to private property, private owners. They're seeking rental amount, which is much, much higher.
I'll pin your opposing counsel down on that in the next minute.
Well, I was going
to. Are you trying to get more than they charge other people?
No, we're trying to get less than that. I mean, we use their methodology that's set forth in the city ordinance. That if you look at the supplemental declarations of Holmquist and Caseburg, is in fact less than what they believe the fair rental value of the property is. They used the formula that is set out in Ordinance 123611, which, and that's what the city charges for, as council would call it, permitting. It's the based on the abutting parcels value per square foot times a demand factor, and where it's residential property, there's no reduction. There's a reduction if it's industrial, times the rate of return, which as the city sets out is 8%. That's the formula that these owners used. And they said, this is less than we think it's worth, but this is what we're going to accept because it is a clear methodology that the city itself uses.
The only variable is then the length of time. The length of time is different now from when it was when you submitted these things to Judge Bent. Does that require a remand?
No, it doesn't, because
against the length of time?
No. I mean, the owner's claim was limited by temporally from the date of the judgment, which was May 23rd, 2013. Once the judgment quieting title was entered, by law, the owners had the exclusive right to use and possess that property, and they had clear title to it, free and clear of any claim of the city. But the city stayed that.
The amount of money that you would, if you, well, how I want to say this, it's been more months.
It has been.
And you were doing a thing, so obviously the number is bigger.
Well.
So what are you asking?
No, we're asking from the date of judgment to the date of mandate, because upon issuance of the mandate, the stay terminated.
Okay, so it's not more time.
It's not more time. It's 21 months. From May 23rd, 2013. No, it's actually, you know, quite a definite amount set forth in the underlying pleadings.
Okay.
That's what they're asking for.
Okay. I missed that, and of course that's true.
Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our calendar for today. Court will be in recess.
All rise. Court is in recess.